Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch, and today we have an amazing guest. We welcome Dr. Kathy Groover to the show. Kathy is an award-winning author and the host of the national TV show based on her first book, The Alternative Medicine Cabinet. She has earned her PhD in natural health and has authored 5 books in all, with 2 books on stress, body-mind therapies for the body worker, and conquer your stress with the mind-body techniques. On today's show, we will be talking about her latest book, Journey of Healing, her story of her path to healing herself and others. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Read your book. Really, really great. I just want to give the audience a chance to get to know a little bit about you. So if you could tell us a little bit about your bio, and then we'll jump into the book.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been doing massage and alternative medicine for over 25 years now. Started out as a massage therapist, and the more I did that, the more I realized people were really relying on me to help be a health practitioner and not just someone who put an elbow in the spot that hurt. I just kept studying. So I got my master's and PhD, and I studied mind-body medicine at Harvard, and like you said, I've written 5 books, and this is my 5th one, and I've lectured around the world, and I've done tons of radio and TV and magazine articles and newspaper things, and it's been phenomenal. And I like to learn things to distill it down and then teach it to others, because what's the point of me gathering all this knowledge if I don't share it with anybody? So really my purpose is to just keep on learning, and I just recently added hypnotherapy to my practice, so I don't think the learning will ever stop. I joke that I need 2 business cards you have to put together to have all the initials after my name, because I just won't stop. But I love doing it, you know. Over 25 years experience, and I've been able to reach probably millions of people, and that's so awesome. So I'm happy to be here reaching your audience.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. And I'm glad that you mentioned all your other things. I didn't want to go on and on about your bio, because it would have took up the show, because it's
exactly.
An amazing thing how many people you have touched. But what I really was interested in, how did massage kind of be the initial part of your journey?
Yeah, it was completely accidental. I never, ever thought about getting into anything related to health. I never thought, I'm going to go be a massage therapist as a grown-up. But I remember just always having a knack for it. I was good at it. You know, I would sit in drama club and somebody would plop down in front of me and go, could you just rub my shoulders? And you're really good at it. And so I was always putting my hands on people. I just had a natural inclination for that. And then in college, I very accidentally apprenticed with a woman who taught me about massage and body work and herbs and teas and homeopathics and things like that. And at the end of 3 summers apprenticing with her, I realized, wow, I actually am really good at this. And it was probably some innate thing. You know, I shot out of the womb trying to massage the doctor. It was with me since I was a little kid. And so I thought, you know, let's make that. I was a theater major. So when I moved to California, I thought, you know, let's make that one of those side jobs. And in between shows or at shows, you know, I would bring my table and I would work on other actors. And I had a little bit of a practice going on in Hollywood. But when I got here to Santa Barbara, I realized, yeah, you know, this is what I need to be doing. And so it was probably about 15 years ago that I really started doing massage as a full-time thing. And I've won awards for my practice, and it's been phenomenal. It's been phenomenal. And that's the jumping off point for everything else, as I think it is for a lot of healers. I think they start out in massage and then go, oh, there's so much more. And then you just keep going. You just keep going.
So what are some of the benefits of a massage?
Yeah, well, you know, it feels good.
yes.
Sometimes not necessarily the way I do it, because I do really deep tissue, but it still feels good. It shouldn't hurt you. You know, I have people that say, I can't get deep tissue. I bruise. It hurts me. And I'm thinking, well, you need a different practitioner. It helps with lower your blood pressure. It helps with muscle strains and muscle tension and headaches and back pain and neck pain and depending, of course, on what's causing it. And jaw tension. I have a lot of clients that get headaches from jaw tension, and that's helped them so much. If you're getting headaches after you've seen your physician and they guarantee it's not, you know, a brain tumor or something really serious, go get a really good massage. You'd be amazed how much that can help. And it releases feel-good hormones in the brain. So massage just overall not only physically makes us feel better, but emotionally, spiritually makes us feel better as well. And that touch is so important. Having that good touch is something so lacking in our society, especially with the elderly population. And I used to go into several nursing homes and work on some of my clients, you know, grandparents and elderly parents, and oh, they so appreciated it. So, yeah, it's touch is just so valuable.
And then you, basically after you started with the massage, what was your natural progression? Was it to Reiki? I'm sorry, I know I pronounced it wrong. Is that how you pronounce it? Hello? Hi, Kathy? Hello? Kathy? Hey, Kat.
I'm here.
Hi, I didn't hear you for like 15 seconds.
I've been talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it didn't actually come through. I'm not sure how that happened. Don't worry, I'll just edit that out. It's not
okay, perfect.
Deal.
No worries. Reiki. That was my natural thing. I went straight to Reiki, you know, of course, during the massage. It's not a massage technique. It's an energy healing. And someone mentioned to me, hey, you should go try this. And it always drives me crazy when someone says, hey, you should go try this, because maybe I don't want to. You know, it's like everybody has their opinion on what you should be doing, and I'm guilty of that as well. But so many people started talking about Reiki, and every place I looked, I started seeing books on Reiki and ads for Reiki, and I finally went, okay, universe, I guess I'm doing Reiki. And it was amazing. And I wish I would have listened to the woman who expressed to me the first time that I should have been doing it, because it really was a huge benefit to me, to my clients. It heals on all levels of body, mind, and spirit, and I have seen it personally speed wound healing and speed injuries healing. It's so great for emotional healing. I've had clients come in who have lost a child or going through a divorce or lost a parent or just having a really hard emotional time, and it is so amazing for them. They walk out looking like a completely different person. It's a pretty phenomenal technique, and I still do it to this day. It's still a huge part of my practice.
Because in the book you shared an interesting story about losing your energy, you know, after being like negative to yourself. Can you talk about that experience too while you were doing
Reiki? Absolutely. Yeah, I was still performing down in Los Angeles, and I got you have to go through attunements to get basically the ability to give the energy as a healing modality. And there's three levels of that. One does not make you above anybody else. They just call them like Reiki 1, 2, and 3, or master level. And I had done my Reiki 1 attunement, and I was using the energy. I could feel it in my like, you know, if you've clapped for a long time and then you hold your hands about 2 inches apart, there's that vibration there. That's, to me and most everyone else I've talked to, kind of what Reiki feels like. And that energy goes through you and into someone else. Beautiful. And I was doing Reiki on clients and family members and myself, because it's a great self-healing technique. And I went to an after party at a show, and I was in a negative place. I was in a relationship I wasn't happy with and just feeling really bad about myself. And I drank way too much, practically passed out. I mean, it was just a night of overindulgence. I'm sure there was some marijuana involved. I never really did anything hard, so people are like, oh my God, you're in recovery. No. Lots of drinking, probably a little bit of pot. And I woke up the next morning, and I was completely hungover, and I was sick. And a couple days later, I went to go do a Reiki session, and it wasn't there. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's weird. And I went to see my Reiki master, and she said, what'd you do? And I said, well, I didn't know I could do anything. I thought once you had this, you had it. And she said, Kathy, Reiki is a gift. And if you're going to treat yourself like that, why is it going to stick around? Well, stupid me, I was in my early 20s. I was a doofus. I went and did it again. I ended up needing, I think, like 3 Reiki 1 attunements before they finally stuck, because I was just not being good to myself. I was acting out, you know, in a way that was not healthy for me or the people around me. And interestingly, after my Reiki master attunement, I promptly left the relationship I was in, which needed to happen. It was not horrible or anything, but I was just not happy there. So Reiki was actually, to me, one of those spiritual kind of aha moments that really pushed me forward in my development. And anybody I do Reiki on, I share, or attune them, I share, hey, be good to yourself, because this can go away, and you don't want to waste the energy or the time or the money. And it was a huge lesson for me to be a little bit nicer to myself.
Right. So now, you know, obviously a lot of people probably had like similar experiences like you did in your 20s. Now, how about food and stuff like that? Does food and your nutrition affect your ability to do these types of healings?
Yeah, you know, I didn't actually see at that point in time also because I was a starving actress in Hollywood. You know, my diet was awful, and I know I get into so much detail in the book about what my diet was like. You know, Church of Mountain Dew, and I was going through a six-pack a day. And, you know, I was definitely, from that perspective, not being good to myself. I knew that drinking too much and smoking pot was not being good to myself. At that point, I didn't have the knowledge that the nutrition was so far off. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in the 70s and 80s where everything was boxed and bagged and processed and artificial, and I didn't know any better at that point. Slowly,
right.
though, what I've noticed with myself and other people is if you start to become really healthy in one area, the unhealthy mm-hmm. habits in the other areas just sort of drop off. So as you start to really work on your body or your mind or whatever it is, other aspects of your life just sort of fall into place. And I found mm-hmm. that the more I studied and the more I was learning, the nutrition kind of came in fits and starts. It happened, you know, first I gave up the soda, then I gave up the artificial sweetener, then I gave up the processed and fast food, then I get, you know, it was this process. It wasn't this all or nothing, cold turkey, no pun intended, thing. Mm-hmm. So I think as we start to get healthy, we're going to get healthy in all areas.
Gotcha. Now, what are some of the things that you absolutely recommend to avoid as far as nutrition and your diets?
Yeah, absolutely. The top of my list is GMOs. There's still, I'm not sure why we're even still having this debate. If you don't mind that they're in your food, awesome. I do mind. Put it on the label. You know, even if you're not going to completely get rid of them and it's such a moneymaker, I don't think they're going to go away, which is unfortunate because multitudes of other countries have banned them or at the very least require labeling. I'm not sure what's with us, but, well, it's money. When you're making billions of dollars,
absolutely.
You don't give that up. I get that, but you're hurting people, so let's not do that. Let's at least label it. There are people that are having severe allergies to some of the GMO products, and it's not just they'd like to have it labeled, they need to have it labeled. And, you know, we're living in a country where we're supposed to have all these freedoms. Freedom of food should be on that list, freedom of the knowledge. So definitely GMO. There's no good reason to be drinking soda. Cut out the soda. Everyone, especially diet. Diet's even worse than regular, so let's cut out the soda. Artificial sweetener, horrible for us. And I'm an iced tea drinker. I've got a giant jug in front of me right now of iced tea. I use stevia. It's a natural sweetener. So, you know, I would actually rather see people using sugar in moderation. At least the body knows what to do with that. The body
right.
doesn't know what to do with all these chemicals, and I think it's contributing to a lot of our disease and a lot of our obesity and things like that. So high fructose corn syrup is another one. That's been an interesting journey because, you know, you look at 8-9 years ago when we started having this debate about high fructose corn syrup, there was a huge debate. There was commercials basically mocking other mothers of, what do you mean it's not safe? You know, I remember being so offended by those commercials. What do you mean, Jane? What's wrong with it? You know, and they're like offending other mothers. I'm going, oh my God. Now you see all these companies going, we're using natural sugar. We've taken out high fructose corn syrup. So the companies that are smart are going, hey, people are starting to not like this. Let's say we're not using it anymore, and we're going to get that market share. So good for those companies. Welch's is one of them where, with a lot of their products, they've taken the high fructose corn syrup out, and they put regular sugar back in. Good for them. Mm. So, yeah, those are a couple of the ones that I really just – I do my best to avoid. Or if I'm going to have it, like, you know, if I'm in a restaurant and I have – potato, you know, like hash browns, and I want some ketchup. I know there's high fructose corn syrup in it. I'm not going to carry around a bottle of organic ketchup to use once every year. I eat it,
and
I go, okay, well, I'm getting a little bit. Okay, I'm conscious of that, and I'm making this choice, and hopefully I don't get a headache, you know. Knowledge is power, and once we know something, then we have the ability to make a choice.
Awesome, yeah. No, I still don't understand the GMO debate, to be honest. And again, at its simplest, just let people have a choice of whether they want to eat it or not. I mean, label it, and that's the end of it. If it's you know, and then again, I never understood that if you know you're a company, I thought that like the basis of a company is to stand by their product. If you're so proud of it and your product, label it. You know, it's good. But that's a whole other thing. I don't know. I never understand that. But if you could tell us a little bit about your next progression into homeopathic remedies and stuff, that I found that very interesting in the book.
Yeah, and that's interesting. That's one of those big controversial things. I've done radio shows where I've done a whole, like 45 or 50 minutes talking about depression or stress or something. And somebody actually wrote on one of the comments after I had done the show, wow, Dr. Gruber had so much information, and then she said the word homeopathics, and I knew she was a quack. And I'm like, okay, so if you don't believe in them, don't use them. You know,
yes.
But to negate everything I said for an hour because I mentioned the word homeopathics, I'm like, oh, okay, so the past life regression didn't get you. It was the homeopathics that put you over. Okay, whatever, sir. Thanks for listening. Homeopathic, you know, some people believe they're complete bunk. Some people believe they work. I have seen them work, and I have seen them work on animals and children. And my cats are awesome, and they're incredibly bright, but they don't understand placebo effect. They just don't. Most humans don't understand placebo effect. You know, so when I see it working on a creature or a being that doesn't have the cognitive ability to say, ooh, mom gave me this thing. She said it's going to help my headache. I'm going to make my headache go. Babies, toddlers, they can't do that. Animals either. So I've seen it work. And I started out when I studied with Dr. Pat, who was the woman in college who turned me on to massage. She was also into homeopathics. And so arnica, to me, is you've got to have it in your medicine cabinet. You fall down, you get a bruise, you have muscle aches, something. It's so phenomenal at helping with those muscle aches. And I talk about it a lot in the surgery section of the book also because it's great for post-surgery. And it's there's no side effects. And, you know, they're either little sugar pills or little lactose pills, or you get them in, you can get them as a tincture. And you let it melt in your mouth or you drop it under your tongue, and you're done. There's no side effects. It's not expensive. You don't need a prescription. Though, frankly, if you really want to get into homeopathics, please go to someone who knows what they're doing. Homeopathy is an incredibly complex system of medicine. It really is. And if you want to go past getting a single remedy at your grocery store, please go see someone who really knows what they're doing. And I think that's one of the other things about homeopathics is so many people say, well, I tried it and it didn't work. It's like, okay, but did you try the right thing? You know, that's like
right.
taking a blood pressure medication and saying, my leg still hurts. It's like, well, but that's not what it's for. you know, it's like you have to really use it and give it a chance. Because with so many of these natural remedies, it doesn't work like that. It's not Advil. You know, it doesn't just automatically take your headache away. Your menstrual cramps don't just magically disappear after two pills. You really have to be using the right thing for the right amount of time. And I think a lot of people get impatient with that, which I totally get. We're conditioned for fix me now. But you have to give it a chance to work. And to me, homeopathics, you know, whether it's a single remedy or a combination remedy, there's a great Boy Run product called Oscillococcinum. Don't make me spell it. I can if you need me to. I'm just happy I can pronounce it. Oscillococcinum,
yeah.
which is for the flu. I always keep some in the house. When I travel, I take it with me because it's also great for food poisoning, as is Nux Vomica, meaning poison nut. And the concept behind homeopathy is you take a substance which in a large dose, like arsenic, would cause a big problem. You distill that down till there's nothing there but molecules or essence, basically. And it has that opposite effect. It becomes a healing thing. So it's almost sort of the way a vaccine works. You give someone a teeny little dose of it, and it sparks the body to heal itself. And I've seen it work. You know, I've seen it work. Not in all cases and not for everybody, but even if there's a chance of it and there's no side effects, it's not going to hurt you, why wouldn't you try it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, and why is it so unique and specific to the individual as well?
Yeah, and like that's the very... Yeah, totally. That's the very cool thing about homeopathics is, so let's say, you know, five people have a headache, five people go to Western medicine, and just to add in, I'm not anti-Western medicine. Everybody assumes I am. I am all for it. I wish we were using it differently, but this is the system we have right now. So five people with headaches go to the doctor. Chances are three to five of those are going to walk out with the same prescription. Here's your, you know, whatever it is. If you take those same five people and you take them to a homeopathic doctor, they're going to get five vastly different remedies because they really look at symptoms, and the most bizarre symptom, the better. So does it hurt on the right side of your head or the left side of your head? Maybe it's the front of your head. Is that side of your face red? When you bend over, does it feel better or worse? Do you want to drink a bunch of water? If you're out in the air, is it better or worse? If you're, you know, and you go through these really specific things, and that leads you to a really specific remedy, and there's thousands of remedies. So you're going to get really customized medicine, really customized care, which is one of the things I love so much about most of complementary and integrative medicine, is it's really based on you, and we want to get to the root of the problem, not cover up symptoms. Symptom management, awesome. I need it sometimes too, but I really want to know what the root of the problem is, and I want to get to that, and I want to help fix it, and if I can't, I'm going to send you to someone that can. So symptoms, to me, that's a secondary thing, usually, getting rid of the symptoms.
Yeah, no, that's why I really like that part of the book as well. And again, you do not bash, you know, the medical system in the book at all. I think that it does have its purpose in your book as well. And I'm glad that you gave me a little segue about, like, why is it so important to, even when you go to a regular doctor, like that, to get second opinions, third opinions, fourth opinions, et cetera, why is it so important for us to be our own health detectives?
Well, you know, we have to be, because no one else is going to do that for us unless you have a very close family member who's knowledgeable, or you're going to an alternative practitioner. You know, I've had so many experiences where I had a client come to me and she had migraines, and she said, you know, do you think massage can help? And I said, yeah. I said, let's talk about massage. Let's look at your diet. I said, let's start doing a food journal to see what's triggering these headaches. And she gets into my office, and she's 24, and she's a little bit overweight, and not tons of energy. She just seemed very sort of like watery to me, just sort of very flabby in general, just personality and everything. Very sweet girl. And we started talking, and I said, now, have you been diagnosed with migraines, or are these just really bad headaches? And she said, oh, I think they're just really bad headaches. But they had her on three, like, major medications. One was a seizure medication. And I said, well, does this help? You know, at 24 or 25 years old. And I said, well, is this helping you? And she goes, not really, but I'm having these side effects, and then they want to give me more medication. I went, oh, this is where it drives me crazy. You know, you start adding meds on top of meds on top of meds to cover up symptoms, and it's like, oh, my God, you know, side effects, and it drives you, and suddenly you're on 10 things. So we're sitting there talking, and I said, you know, she said, it hurts on the left side of my head and up my neck, and, you know, and we're talking, and I said, oh, well, what do you do for a living? And she said, oh, well, I'm a receptionist. And I said, oh, do you crunch the phone between your ear and your shoulder? And she looks at me and she goes, well, yeah, because I'm writing stuff as I'm on the phone. And I said, do you crunch that with the left side of your body? And she looks at me and she goes, oh, my God. Now, this was about 20 or 25 minutes into just a very general conversation about what her pain was like, why she was having the pain, when it started. 20 minutes in, your doctor's on to his third patient, not his or her fault. That's the system we have. But through talking to her, I realized, okay, you're crunching the phone against you. It's muscle tension. It's not a migraine. And I got her on the massage table, and I'm massaging her, and all of a sudden her entire body just melted. She just literally dropped about 2 inches into the table and went, oh, my God, my headache's gone. And at last, talked to her, and it's been a long time since I've seen her. The headaches didn't come back. She made her boss get her a headset, and what's ironic about that is they are a workers' comp attorney. So they do that kind of work. And I said, oh, yeah. they don't want you to be a client. They want to keep you an employee, so get you a headset. You know, and I showed her some stretches, and it was just a miracle. Well, the doctors don't have time to figure that out. And she didn't think about it either. That's the other reason it is so important to know ourselves, because really, had she sat down and thought, okay, I've got a headache on the left side of my body, the left side of my neck hurts, the left side of my head hurts, what am I doing? She probably would have gotten there, but I asked the right questions in the right time. And to me, it's all about helping someone facilitate their healing. I've even had that happen where I've woken up with a headache and my husband's like, well, go figure it out. And he closed the door on me and left me in the dark. And I'm laying there going, why do I have a headache? And I started massaging my scalp and my neck, and I got to my jaw and realized clearly I had been clenching my teeth in the night. Didn't even realize it. I massaged my jaw. I relaxed my jaw. I came out about 20 minutes later, and he goes, there, see? And I went, thank you. I would have popped a couple Advil and not known the cause of it. Now I know the cause of it. So I can fix the problem and not just the symptoms. You know, it's we have to ask those questions and really explore ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, I totally agree. And it's very, very important to actually know yourself. And that's another thing that I was going to ask you as far as like getting into like mindset. And I really, really like that part of the book as well. And not only know physically what you're doing, but there's a mental component of things that manifests itself in your body and it comes out physically. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. There's this a huge connection between the body and the mind. And, you know, that's one of the things that we are really kind of missing in Western medicine. That's where I see a big hole right now is, you know, I go to my doctor and I have to fill out this 5-page form about, you know, are my parents alive and what they die of and have I ever had these things and I get to check yes or no and when was my last pap smear and do I have to, you know. But nowhere on that list does it ask if I'm stressed. It wants to know if I'm smoking crack and if my husband's beating me. But it doesn't ask about stress. And to me, that's the second question. What's wrong with you? How are you feeling? Are you stressed? And that is a huge part of my practice, and that's a huge part of my lectures, and I have 2 books on stress, because that is right now contributing, they believe, to about 60 to 90% of our doctor's visits are from stress-related illness. Why are we not addressing that part of it? Because then you have to sit down and have a conversation about life with your patient, and that's a long conversation. They don't have time, which is, again, not their fault, because I know that doctors and physicians, they got into medicine because they want to help. I really hope that's the altruistic reason they got into that field and not just to have a nice car and make a bunch of money. I really think they want to help, and they're in a position where they can't always, and that would drive me crazy. But we have to look at that mind-body connection. And the way I even found out, the very first moment that I realized, I was always a fan of Louise Hay and her books, Heal Your Life. And she had all these correspondences between like body parts, and she'd give you affirmations and things like that. I always found that fascinating. But I had a client on my table. I had just started my practice in Santa Barbara, and she was having hand and wrist pain. And it was diagnosed not as carpal tunnel. She had had the test, but it was hurting her. And she adjusted her workstation, and she was doing her stretches, and she was icing, and she was heating, and she was doing everything right. And the massage would last a little while, but it would slowly come back. And finally, after the 3rd or 4th time of seeing her, it was driving me crazy that I couldn't get this to be a permanent solution. And I said, oh, please tell me again when this hurts you. Like, what activities are you doing, thinking I missed some teeny little muscle or something? And she said, you know, well, it hurts when I'm grabbing things and grasping things. I can't hold my hair dryer, and I can't lift a gallon of milk, and I can't hold a wine glass, which I thought was truly a tragedy. So I figured we needed to fix this poor woman so she could have her wine. But I listened to the words she said, grab and grasp and grip, and I said, well, is there something you're holding on to too tightly? Is there something that you need to let go of? And her eyes popped open, and she looked at me, and she said, I don't want to let my kids go. And I thought, oh my God, she has an answer. Because I didn't think she had, I didn't ask her to have an answer. I just kind of like posed the question to the universe, and that she had such a profound answer. And she shared with me that when she was a kid, her brother was killed in a car crash right after his 16th birthday. He never came home, drunk driver. And it ripped the family to shreds. And now her kids were like 15 and a half and 14, and they wanted that independence, and she just couldn't give it to them. And I said, wow, that's incredible, and I'm so sorry, what a horrible tragedy. I said, have you ever told them this? She said, well, they knew I had a brother, but I never told them the story. And I said, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but if for no other reason than to give them insight into why mom is so overbearing, because, you know, kids don't understand their parents' reasoning behind stuff like that. I said, if for no other reason, just tell them that this happened and explain this is why you have so much trouble giving them the freedom that they want. She said, yeah, that's a good idea. So she went home that night, and after dinner they sat down and she told the kids, and they cried and they looked at pictures and they had this new understanding. And when I saw her the following week, her hands didn't hurt as bad. And then before her next massage, she called and she said, you know what, I'm feeling really good. Can we do 2 weeks? And I said, yeah. And then it was 3 weeks, and then it was once a month for maintenance, and then I never saw her again. And that's how I want to lose a client. And I don't have a double-blind placebo-controlled study on this. Was it placebo? I don't care. Call it Bob, Bill, call it whatever you want. She was totally healed in that moment. She was cured in that moment. And I think had she not addressed the not letting her kids go, that grasping onto something so hard, I think that it would have hung on. And again, I have no proof of that other than the experiences that I've had countless times with clients who have had similar things happen, because our bodies are holding on to those emotions. And even if it's 10%, even if it's 5%, why would you not do that extra 5% if, you know, again, there's no side effects. You don't need a prescription. You do need to do a little self-reflection, and there's a little bit of work. But these are the phrases we use in this society, and I know I listed bunches in the book of, you know, I can't stomach this, and who's the pain in the neck, and I have a fear of moving forward, or you twisting your ankles, or you having foot issues, you know, I can't, my hands are full, my heart is open, my heart is breaking, get this off my chest, you know, these are the phrases we use. What's to say that's not a clue to what we're holding on to in our bodies? And I've seen it with my own family, I've seen it with me, I've seen it with clients and friends. Try examining it from that perspective, and it's huge. And the stress is, you know, such a dynamic part of our lives that we're not allowing to be fully healed.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I definitely want to touch on the stress issue a little bit more and get some tips on it. But I just can't help but mention the part in your book that you did say that 60,000 thoughts we have 60,000 thoughts a day, and 50,000 of them are negative. So if we have these ideas like in our head that we're holding on to something, and we have all these emotional issues as well, and then we have all this negativity, is that a factor into some of the reasons why we're so sick too?
I believe so. I'm sure somebody would argue with me that, you know, the negative people that I know, and we all know them, they're either, you know, negative about something that happened 20 years ago, or something's wrong now, or it'll be wrong later, or, you know, there's always something wrong. They're not happy unless they're unhappy. Maybe it's an aunt, maybe it's your mom, maybe it's you, maybe it's a girlfriend, maybe it's, you know, we know that person who you see there on the call and you go, oh, God, I can't handle this right now. They are so happy in their miserableness, and Carolyn Mace, who has written tons of books, and I've listened to so many of her lectures and workshops, and she talks a lot about that too, and she says that our biography becomes our biology, which is basically what I'm saying. You know, these thoughts are going to manifest somewhere in our body, and countless doctors talk about that. Andrew Weil talks about being negative, and, you know, it's such a huge factor in our healing, and if no other reason, those negative thoughts are creating a stress response, because our brain doesn't understand the difference between what we're thinking about and imagining and what's actually happening to us. It can't distinguish that. That's why we can get so into the movie or so into the book, or we wake up from the dream feeling guilty that we slept with the paper boy. Are there still paper boys? Probably not. For those of you that don't know what a paper boy is, he would actually show up at your house with a newspaper. Then we'll have to explain what a newspaper is. It's too long. Because we don't understand that's a fantasy and that's not really happening. And so if you're dwelling on something from the past, if you're thinking, oh, my God, that was the worst day ever, and you let yourself go into that and you feel it, you're actually having a stress response. You're having a fight-or-flight response to something that's not actually happening. And we're constantly forming new pathways and new synapses and stuff in the brain. So if you start down that path of negativity, it's going to lead to more negative thoughts and more negative thoughts. And then you're going to find your brain filled with negative thoughts, and it's really hard to break that. I tried to figure out why in the world we are so prone to go negative instead of positive. I think part, it comes to the nurture versus nature thing. I think part of it is how we were raised. You know, if you have that mom who, the second something, you know, your dad's late 2 minutes from dinner, and of course he's dead on the side of the road. It's not maybe there's traffic. It's not maybe he got stuck on a phone call. It's, oh, I'm sure he's dead. You know, it's like, well, how did we go to that? How did we get there so quickly? And then also we are wired to respond to negative quicker than positive as a protection thing. Because if you're about to touch something hot and I say, no, you need to respond to that fast. If you score a goal and I say, yay, good job, you don't need to hear that as quick. I did find a couple studies on that when I was doing my dissertation that we are just wired to respond to negative stimulus quicker. And they postulated because, well, that's a lifesaver for us. So I don't know. I'd love to find out more about that as to why we tend towards the negative quicker. But it's definitely detrimental to us. It's definitely having an effect on our health and our health outcomes. You know, we heal less well if we're being negative about it and we're stressed and we're having negative thoughts. That's been proven.
Absolutely. So what are some tips that you can recommend to actually help us with the stress issue and the negative thought issue?
Yeah, you know, it's really easy to say, oh, okay, well, I'll just stop thinking things. Yeah, that doesn't work. We can't just stop thinking things. You know, it's the whole thing of, you know, okay, everyone, don't think of an elephant. Well, as soon as I say that, you've got an elephant in your head, you know. So rather than saying, don't think of an elephant, I'll say, okay, don't think of an elephant, think of a camel. Well, now you've got a camel that replaced that elephant, and that's where I like affirmations. Because rather than stopping the thoughts, you transform them. Kind of like you would ask the question about the Bach flower essences, and Edward Bach said, don't fight it, transform it. It's the same concept of, you know, rather than trying to stop something, make it something else. So rather than saying, and this is the example I always use because it applies to everyone, that feeling like you're getting sick, and I'm surrounded by people who are saying things like, oh, geez, I hope I don't get sick. Or, oh, it's June, guess I'm going to get sick. Or, oh, hey, it's flu season. Oh, my God, I hope I don't get sick. The kids bring home everything. And we start to just have this mantra of, oh, getting sick. Well, rather than thinking that, which depletes the immune system, which leads to getting sick, say something like, I am healthy and well. My immune system is strong and resilient. My body is flexible and powerful. You can transform any thought pattern into an affirmation. And I help people with that all the time. And I have seen them do wonders. They can change not only our physiology, but a lot of people believe our external circumstances as well. Visualize the parking space, you know, and if you've seen any of the movies like The Secret or What the Bleep Do We Know, there are people that base their whole lives on vision boards and positive thinking, and it's huge. It changes everything around us. It really, really does. And if nothing else, it changes our mindset on it. So doing affirmations, you want to keep them short, positive, and in the present moment. I am healthy and well. I am prosperous and abundant. I am surrounded by loving and supportive friends. I get that promotion. Can really help. It really does help change things in our lives and our bodies.
Absolutely. So how about the stress part of it? How can we, like, lessen that in our stressful world?
Right, absolutely. Well, the key to realize, and it's so funny because I go through probably two or three chapters in my book on stress before I say, oh, hey, by the way, stress isn't the problem. And I'm sure people went, wait, what? You just talked about stress. The reason stress isn't the problem is we can't control the stress. We can't stop the stress. So what we can control and what we can change is our reaction to it. That's all we have in our power. We can't change the traffic. We can't change the government. We can't change so many things. We can change how we think about it, how we view it, how we respond to it. And that's one of the great things about meditation, and I know you're so ready to hear about this because you told me I need to meditate, us type A folk. You know, and visualization and the affirmations change that, and it stops that stress response. Things like cognitive restructuring, which I don't think I talk about in Journey of Healing, but I do talk about in Conquer Your Stress. There are so many amazing techniques to help with your stress response. And we do have a choice. We can respond to things or we can react to things. And when we react to things, it tends to be this very long-lived knee-jerk, very unconscious reaction to things. You know, someone cuts you off in traffic and you start yelling and screaming and you flip them off, and that's a reaction. You jerk, what are you doing? The response is, okay, they cut me off. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they just found out their wife was in an accident. Maybe, you know, but no one was hurt. Okay, I had to tap my brakes. If I flip them off and start yelling, what good is that going to do? They're not going to stop their car and apologize. So I'm just going to let that one go, and I'm going to stay in a calm state. Why stress myself out? That takes a pause rather than just yelling and screaming, flipping the person off, which is a reaction. And doing things like meditation and mindfulness practices train you to respond to things without judgment rather than just having that knee-jerk reaction. And it's to me, one of the keys of staying sane, especially driving here in California. I go to L.A. all the time, and if I got mad every time someone cut me off, you know, you'd find me in a loony bin tied up and on some sort of very powerful medication. We have a choice. You know, it's true. We have a choice as to how we respond to these things and how we feel about it. Well, I take that back. We can't necessarily control emotions. We can definitely control our thoughts and responses. So yeah, that's one of those stress things. Are you ready to learn to meditate?
I guess. I mean, I've had countless people on this show try to teach me a little bit into how to get better at it. And I know for a fact this is my fault. I quit. I need to keep up with it and kind of just work up to it and actually get some traction with it. And I just give up because my mind is going all over the place, and it's too hard.
I know. But, and I'm so glad you said it all that way, because that's you just hit on every single reason why myself and multitudes of people I know don't meditate. It's hard. It's time-consuming. And it for me, it became me sitting there with something cramping, with something else itching, and me going, oh, I was supposed to call so-and-so. And it basically became sit down for 2 minutes and think of your to-do list. That's what meditation, it was the to-do list meditation. And there actually was a place for that, because if I got my mind clear enough that I could remember something I really needed to do that I had forgotten, to me that's a win. Not the purpose of meditation, but, you know, it was organizing for me. I'm very type A. I dance for fun. I do trapeze for fun. Don't tell me to sit still. My mother always said, oh, God, will you sit still? You're making me nervous. And I'm thinking, why don't you get up? You look bored. You know, to me, this is why sit still? And that's why when, and I know there's a very, you know, transcendental meditation and seated meditation and mindfulness meditation. There are so many ways to do it. And to me, you have to find what works for you. Sitting on the pillow, quieting my mind, stilling my body, doesn't work for me. I can do it now because I've studied so many different ways to do it, but it's not my favorite way of doing it. I would rather do a walking meditation or a counting meditation where I'm counting my breaths and my footsteps, and I do this thing with my fingers, and, you know, I'm occupying every part of my being, but I'm still meditating. The way I learned that finally clicked with me was at Harvard. I studied with Herbert Benson at the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Harvard and Mass General. Amazing program. It was me and about 150 physicians. So that was stressful right there, because it's like, I'm not a doctor, but oh my gosh, I'm here. And the woman who instructed us on this, she was incredible. She did a lot of guided visualization, CDs and things. So she talked like this. And it was very soothing and comforting, and it was driving me crazy after a while, because I'm like, come on, finish a sentence. You know, because she was talking so slow and methodical. It was beautiful. And after the second day, I gave into that, and I'm like, okay, this is her cadence, and it's beautiful, and it actually does lull me into a sense of relaxation. Not the way I talk, clearly, but it worked. And she said, you know, how many of you meditate? And I turned, because I'm in the front row, of course. So I turn around and look, and like a couple hands went up. And she said, how many of you think you can't meditate? And she looked right at me. And she stared at me. Until I finally hesitantly raised my hand, and she looked at me and nodded like, Like, what? You know, so I don't know if I was wearing my, you know, the giant A on my chest for type A that day or what. But she had my number. And the only two rules of meditation for her, for this way of doing it, was concentrate on something repetitive, and if thoughts intrude, which they will, dismiss them without judgment and return to the meditation. And I thought, oh my, okay, I don't have to sit a certain way and cross my legs and stick my tongue somewhere and look up to my forehead and not scratch anything and, and float away into a million bubbles. That's seriously what I thought it was, because that's what I was always taught. And we stayed in our, you know, it's like, and I couldn't do it. It was hard for me. So I sat there and I closed my eyes, and what we were concentrating on was our breath, the rise and fall of our chest. So inhale and exhale, just thinking about how that feels, noticing that. And then on the inhale, we think, I am. And on the exhale, think, at peace. And just repeat that. And if other thoughts intrude, which they do, the to-do list, the I have to call so-and-so, the what's for dinner, I wonder if Castle's on tonight, say, hey, I'm thinking. And then go back to inhale, I am. Exhale at peace. And the benefits of that are huge. And it's so simple to do, because, Omar, you don't have to turn off your thoughts. You have to focus your thought on I am at peace. And if you're thinking I am at peace, you can't be thinking of anything else.
Right.
Because two thoughts cannot occupy our brain at the same time. This was a lifesaver for me and everyone around me driving on the freeway in L.A. Because I do this, don't close your eyes if you're driving, that creates a whole other set of problems, but I do this before I get on the radio, I did a couple minutes of this before I got on with you today, I do this when I'm working on massage clients, I have taught this to probably at this point millions of people who have either heard me talk about it on the radio or TV or read the book or an article, or, you know, and I have gotten more emails and notes and phone calls about, oh my God, the mini meditation saved my life, than anything else.
Wow.
Because everybody can do it. And I'll tell you a very, if I can, if we have time, a very funny story about the mini. I had a client who was a very heavy drug user. He would smoke about $400 worth of pot a week.
Wow.
Now, I don't smoke pot anymore. I did as a theater major, and I do remember you could get an awful lot for $25, so I'm not sure how much he's going through for $400. It's a long time. Clearly, the price went up.
It's inflation, I guess.
That's a big inflation. Yeah, I can see why all the dispensaries are doing well. And he has anger issues and anxiety issues, and he, quote, doesn't want to take medication, so he vapes pot. Okay.
Oh.
But $400 a week, that's a lot of pot. Of his parents' money, by the way. And so we had a session on stress, and he said, you know, he wanted to change his diet. We went over some things. And interestingly, he ate great. He was all organic and raw, but tons of pot. And so I said, you know, I taught him the mini meditation, and he went off and did his thing. And a couple weeks later, he came back just for a regular massage session. And I was kind of, I wonder if I should ask. I said, so, hey, how's the stress, and how's the anger, and how's the pot, and how's it working out? And he's a surfer. And I'm not a surfer, but I understand if someone takes your wave, it's basically the equivalent of, like, beating your mother with a stick. So he was out surfing, and he goes, oh, man, I was surfing, and this guy took my wave, man. And I'm thinking, oh, no. Because he's known to punch people, and the cops have been called. And, you know, so I thought, oh, Jesus, this is not going to end well. He goes, I followed this guy to the beach. And I went, uh-huh. And he goes, I was just about to pound him. And I'm thinking, oh, boy. And now I'm about to say a slightly bad word. You can bleep it if you have to. And I did, but instead I did that mini shit thing, and I didn't hit him. And I'm like, what? He did the mini shit thing. Call it whatever you want. I don't care. But that's what he called it. Great. It kept him from punching someone in the face.
That's it.
He's now moved away. I don't know if he's still using the mini thing, but it worked for him. And it caused him to pause for just long enough that he didn't punch this guy in the face, and he didn't end up probably in jail. That's huge. I've taught this to kids, and I have to say, though, if it works for me, if I can do it, and I'm probably as type A as you can get, it'll work for you. And it'll work for anybody. So use the mini. If you take away nothing else from this hour-long phone conversation, the mini, it's huge. I am at peace. It's all you have to do in brief. So simple and so effective.
Yeah, I guess I get caught up in that idea that you have to really, really clear your mind and kind of not focus on anything and almost get to a blank slate. And it's impossible, you know. But some people claim that that's what happens, I guess, with practice and time and stuff like that. But I'm definitely going to try the mini. That is absolutely something that I'm going to need to try to do, because it sounds like a lot better than what I've been told over the course of my life.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure, give it a shot and let me know how it works. And I'm sure there's probably formal meditators listening to this and going, that's not meditation, that's not right, that's not... And to me, there's very little, and this is where I'm so pragmatic in my approach. There's very little that's right. There's not one right way to do things. There's very few things that I'm 100% on. GMOs, high fructose corn syrup, soda, artificial sweetener, I do my best to be 100% on that. But like I said, you know, occasionally, the artificial sweetener I will not have. That I absolutely cannot have. Yeah, I have the occasional high fructose corn syrup and the ketchup, which means I just had a GMO product. Okay, something's going to kill me. I just read a study. 10 out of 10 of us are going to die. There's been no double-blind placebo control on that, but I'm pretty sure it's true. So we can either be completely strict and paranoid about what we're doing, or we can give ourselves a break, and that's where I talk about the 80-20 thing, because I don't think we can do anything 100%. So when people say, well, that's not right, it's like, but it's right for me. And I have a girlfriend, and I tell this story all the time. She's very type B. She knows how to relax. She will sit in a chaise lounge, and she'll sit there. That's what she'll do. And I'm thinking, are you being punished for something? Like, why are you in timeout? Why do you have to sit there? She won't read. She doesn't do work. She just sits there. which to me, I would lose my mind. I would go bat crazy if I had to just sit in the chair. I'm like, what am I going to do? And I understand I need to work more on being than doing. I'm actually really working on that, just being. But sitting in a chair isn't my way of being. Dancing is my way of being. Trapeze is my way of being. Cuddling with the cats, having a glass of wine with my husband, that's my way of being. Not everybody should be doing yoga. I love yoga. I don't do yoga. But I'm so tired of everybody going, oh, I suppose I should do yoga. Why? Why should you do yoga? Because your aunt saw it on some newscast that you should do yoga. Not everybody should do yoga.
Yeah,
it doesn't work for everybody. It does not. It makes my back hurt. To which someone actually said to me, oh, well, you're not doing it right. And I looked and I said, I'm sorry. Who would know better than you? Or better than me? I know my own body, and I've studied yoga. Yoga doesn't work for me. Yeah. Dance class works for me. I don't want to run. I do occasionally have an urge to run. It's very bizarre because I hate running. But, you know, you have to find what works for you. And if it's not homeopathics, maybe it's herbs. If it's not herbs, maybe it's acupuncture. Maybe it's Ayurvedic medicine. Maybe it's you know, Thai. There's something else. But you have to find what works for you. And it drives me crazy when people do this all or nothing, one way thing. Because that's not going to work. You know, so meditate the way it works for you.
No, that I'm glad that you brought that up because I think that's what causes a lot of stress too. People try to make things work that for them that just doesn't work for them. Relationships, like you said, these diets, everything. They just want to do something 100% or just stick with something too long, and it drives them crazy.
Right. I did a radio show with a woman who was doing everything in her power to get me into a fight with her. She was ready to just have conflict on her show, and she was very hyper, and I mean, I'm hyper, but I mean, she was very just like sort of aggressive with her language, and I said, well, you know, I go with the 80-20 rule because I don't think it's possible to do anything 100%, and she said, I do it 100%. She said, I'm raw, I'm vegan, I do CrossFit, I do it 100%. And I said, that sounds miserable. And she was just stunned silence. Because it's like, I'm not going to argue with you. I've been on radio shows with people who are pro-GMO, and I won't argue with you. I'll give you my perspective, and I hope that you have the respect to listen to my perspective. And if you simply say you're an idiot, the phone call's over. But I want to hear other people's views. I don't eat raw. I don't eat vegan. I'm a meat eater. I'm not paleo. That's probably the closest. But unless my paleo people had wine, I'm not paleo. You know, it's like I eat and drink what works for me.
Yeah.
And it's an experiment. It's an experiment sometimes to figure it out. And I know people that try to force their round peg into the square vegan hole, and it just does not work. They're sick, they're gray, or they gain a bunch of weight because they're now eating nothing but chips and soda because they're not having meat. And pick what works for you. And the blood type diet thing, wrong, doesn't work. Just throw that out there. Debunked numerous times. That's been debunked numerous times. So if you're following that, if it works for you, great. But don't try to force yourself into that because it's not scientifically accurate.
That's a little ridiculous. I agree with that. So listen, I know we're running out of time, and you've been obviously a great guest, and I loved everything that you said today. Give the audience an opportunity to just get in touch with you, tell them about your book, how to get your book, anything, that parting words that you want to say, that would be great to wrap the show up.
Absolutely, and thanks for having me. Let's do this again. We'll cover the other third of the questions that we didn't get to.
Oh, boy. That's another story that I'll share with the audience. Jeez, I mean, I had a lot of questions that I wanted to ask, and you were absolutely correct that it was ridiculous for me to think I was going to cover them in an hour, and you needed three. So I was wrong.
We did pretty good. I'm sorry we didn't talk about the trapeze, though, because I'm actually going to go to
and the hip-hop dance.
And the hip-hop dance and the bullying and
the modeling. We got to do a part two.
We got to do a part two. It would be my pleasure to do part two. The best way to reach me is on my website, which is thealternativemedicinecabinet.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there. It goes out. I'm about to start doing just a really short one once a month just because I've been so lax with it, and people love the info. So once a month, and if you sign up for the newsletter, you get a super secret health tip video. And all my books are there on the store page as well, Conquer Your Stress, which won its fifth award and covers about 60 different ways of dealing with stress. And my latest, Journey of Healing, which talks about everything we covered today, plus a lot of those crazy personal stories with lessons in them. And they're fun and funny, and some are embarrassing, and some are tear-jerkers, so have the Kleenex prepared from what I'm told. And there's a lot of just free resources there, a lot of links to past media and articles I've written or contributed to, and radio and TV shows I've done. So yeah, check it out, thealternativemedicinecabinet.com, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and, you know, all that good stuff. So find me there too, connect with me. And my parting words. So see, we have choices, and that's actually what this book is about. Journey of Healing is about choices. And we have a choice of what kind of care we seek out and what practitioner we use and what we put in our minds and how we respond to things and what we put in our bodies. And there's always another option. There's always another opportunity. And with every breath, we have the ability to create a completely different reality for ourselves by making different choices. So you might not always remember you have choices, or you might not like them all, or there might be too many or not enough, but they're there. And if you look to those, you're going to be able to transform your life into whatever you want.
Well, well said. Kathy, thank you so, so much for being on the show. I had a great, great time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. We'll do it again.
Well, thanks. All right. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
That was Kathy Groover. Excellent, excellent, guys. Thank you so much for listening today on the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I'm your host, Omar Carverbatch. Have a good day.